They never warned you about the smell. You could look at all the photographs you wanted. Twisted images of skull victims, bodies torn into fleshy ribbons. The corpses of the beasts themselves, their shattered bone plates, mouths hanging open, bullet holes torn through their nasal cavities. Splinters of cartilage and gristle suspended in stringy ropes of shredded muscle and dangling vessels. Plenty of times before, Staff Sergeant Robert Sullivan had nearly lost his lunch poring over intel reports from sites of skull massacres. He'd read the descriptions, studied the casualty numbers, and even sifted through videos. As a career intelligence analyst within the Army, it was rote practice. Making sense of the data, all the numbers and interviews and briefings, was his cup of tea. Or more often, a Glencairn glass of whiskey. He had served as a human collector for nearly a decade, or human intelligence collector. He'd done the same in Afghanistan before the tide. That was long before the fronts of war had changed dramatically, and he'd been called home to serve in his own country. But instead of focusing on talking to people and compiling data more and more, he'd been sent out into the field on recovery ops. He'd rarely had to fire a bullet in Afghanistan throughout his whole decade of on-and-off deployments. At home, though, everywhere was short-staffed, which meant instead of just analyzing the data and collecting intel by talking to other investigators and witnesses and soldiers, he was being sent to gather the data himself. He'd squeezed the trigger of his Army-issued M4A1 so much that it would be weird if he didn't shoot when going outside the wire on his flavor-of-the-day mission. It was grueling, demanding, relentless. But what choice did he have? He walked through the muck down a street in Mangonia Park in West Palm Beach, Florida. Sporadic street lamps hung precariously over the waterlogged road, looking as if they might fall with a gentle gust. Given the recent hurricanes ravaging the coast, it was a wonder any lights still stood. The storm drains near the shoddy driveways of the single-family block construction homes were clogged by detritus and mud, leading to flooding in most of the yards and streets. Each step sent a new wave of water swamping Sullivan's boots. He could feel his toes wrinkling. His drenched socks squished as he pushed forward past a Mercury with a dark maroon hood that didn't match its silver body color. Overgrown hedges sprawled under wind-beaten palms. Rusted chain-link fences clanked with each gust, and swirling water flowed through the downtrodden neighborhood. The skies were gray with an incoming rainstorm. Sullivan wanted to get in and out before the worst of it hit. He and his six-man team just had to search one house for evidence of potential human trafficking. Supposedly, some civvies had gone missing. Their families said that some men took them to this neighborhood. The local law enforcement, or at least the few officers left stubbornly trying to protect this place, suspected this was a trap house run by a local gang. Supposed to have been a place filled with drug dealers and users. Someone even reported suspicious skull activities in the area, claiming to have seen new skulls that hadn't been previously documented. Of course, most reports like that were hogwash. Most civilians saw a skull and got so freaked out, they claimed it was even more monstrous than it really was. Skulls were inherently terrifying. Sullivan was intentively familiar with how frightening the creatures were, but these stories civilians told one another and government officials about new versions of the Oni ancient infected monsters almost always bordered on the fantastical, kind of like how a fish just keeps getting longer the more a fisherman tells the tale of his own white whale.